You'll be rubber.
I'll not be rubber.
You'll be I'm a rubber.
I'll be I'm rubber.
I'll not be thief.
You'll be thief.
I'll not be rogue.
You'll be rogue.
I'll not be steal.
You'll be steal.
I'll not be rubber.
You'll be rubber.
I'll not be I'm rubber.
You'll be I'm rubber.
I'll not be thief.
You'll be thief.
I'll not be rogue.
You'll be rogue.
I'll not be steal.
You'll be steal.
I'll not be rubber.
I'll
not be I'm rubber.
Argument,
argument, argue.
Argument, argument.
Them argue.
Argument,
everybody
argument.
Them argue.
Argument, argument.
Them argue.
Argument,
oh, them argue.
Argument,
everybody them argue.
Argument,
them argue. Them
argue.
Yes, yes, them argue.
Argument,
everybody them argue.
Argument,
argument. About stealing. Somebody don't take something we belong to another person. Then you go here. You'll be thief.
I'll not be thief.
You'll be rogue.
I'll not be rogue.
You'll be steal.
I'll not be steal.
You'll be rubber.
I'll not be rubber.
You'll be I'm a rubber.
I'll be I'm rubber.
I'll not be thief.
You'll be thief.
I'll not be rogue.
You'll be rogue.
I'll not be steal.
You'll be steal.
I'll not be rubber. I'll not be I'm a rubber.
I'm rubber.
Argument, argument, argue.
Argument, argument.
Them argue.
Argument,
everybody
argument.
Them argue.
Argument, argument.
Them argue.
Argument,
oh,
argument.
Them argue.
Argument,
everybody
argument.
Them argue.
Argument,
them argue.
Argument, argument.
Argument about stealing. Somebody don't take something we belong to another person. On top of the road, on the side, the people, the worker. Office workers, the labor workers, workers, workers. Them go day, worker. Inside bus, them go day. Motorcycle, them they ride. Plenty, plenty crowd. Inside this crowd. Sometimes for one corner, sometimes for one street. You go there here.
Catch up, catch up, thief, thief, thief. Catch up, catch up, rob, rob, rob. Catch up, catch up, robber, robber. Catch up, catch up,
thief, thief, thief.
Catch up, catch up,
get up.
Is Africa Live.
We have on the phone a caller.
I don't understand, how is it okay and legal to bomb people on a daily basis all over the world, to starve people, and then when some airplanes fly into some towers, a guy gets off his medicine and starts shooting up the mall or something, then the world comes to an end.
Garvey's movement was a serious challenge to imperialism, because if Africans begin to work for our own interests, then we ain't working for theirs.
In the final analysis, white feminism just becomes, I don't know, a leftist feminist tool of colonial domination.
So this discussion has to happen.
This is Africa Live.
Raising up the question of African women in a way that contributes to our liberation and unification.
ABDEP sees our nursing school as an extension of what Marcus Garvey established in the early 1920s with the Black Cross nurses. Our nurses are being trained to not only again be nurses, but to be African international.
This is Africa Live.
I sympathize with these people so much that I hope that as a consequence of what has happened to them, they will be able to look at the rest of the world as humans as well. They will be able to assume that the next victim of a drone attack in Afghanistan may also have parents, may also have community people who will suffer and cry for them as well.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
Uhuru, this is Omali Ishatella. Welcome to today's show. It should be an interesting show for most of us. It will deal with the issue of the African People's Socialist Party, rather the question of party building, the significance of political parties in general. One objective that we have in this with this show, obviously, is to recruit to and build the African People's Socialist Party. But beyond that, our objective is to help people to understand what political parties are, because there is a probability that most people who are listening to this show have some kind of relationship to a political party and will understand that relationship based on how the political parties define themselves and how civic classes in seventh grade have told us what political parties are about. We are going to differ with that assumption. I have on the phone with me Comrade Luizi Kinshasa. He is located in London, England. He is a Congolese, Congo-born African who is the Secretary General of the African Socialist International that has the responsibility of organizing Africans into a worldwide political party in every place on earth where African people are located. In Houston, Texas, we have Comrade Omowale Kefing, who is the political editor of the Burning Spear newspaper, longtime veteran of the African People's Socialist Party, and someone who has a very important background in around the question of building the party. This is an important discussion for us, Comrade Luizi and Kefing. I want to welcome you.
Hello, Chairman. Hello, listeners. And as usual, I'm really privileged to be on the radio so we can discuss the revolution of African people.
I just wanted to say that we're having this discussion within a particularly important and in many ways contradictory context, Comrade Kefing. One of the things that makes this discussion extremely important is the fact that we are living in an era now subsequent to the defeat of a revolutionary movement in this country in the 1960s, where the black revolution, well, that's within the world, had been defeated, where masses of people, scores had been killed, members of the Black Panther Party and other organizations during the 1960s, where hundreds had been rounded up by various police agencies, locked up in mass sweeps, where throughout the world we saw the assassination of Patrice Lumumba, the overthrow of Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana, the arrest and constant harassment of Mangalisa Sobukwe, one of the leading founders of the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania, 1967 capture and murder of Che Guevara in Bolivia. We saw where there was this period of extremely high revolutionary participation by masses of people around the world, excitement and enthusiasm by Africans and others for what clearly appeared to be a new dawn that we were approaching. And then all of this crushed down by the U.S. and other imperialist forces. And subsequent to that, we've seen a substitute for revolutionary activity. We've been moved from a period where people had their own independent organizations, which was one of the things that helped to characterize them as revolutionary, to a place now where most of the political activity that we're involved in throughout the world is as an extension of some arm, some branch, some institution of imperialism, whether that is in Africa and various other places or here in the United States. So people have been pushed out of active participation, active political participation for the most part. And now computer participation, talk shows of various sorts substitute for activism by the masses of the people. And that's one side of the story. On the other hand, there's incredible crisis of this social system that relies on the passivity of the majority of Africans and other peoples around the world. It's a deep and profound crisis that has its basis in the very nature of the social system itself, being that it is a parasitic social system. And I say social system, I'm talking about based on capitalism, which itself was born of colonialism and slavery. And now we see this profound crisis as more and more people are fighting for and winning on some level or another a state of freedom and independence from the imperialists, capturing or recapturing their own economy, their own sovereignty, etc. And this has led to another kind of excitement among masses of people around the world that shows that, as the popular slogan goes, another world is possible. We've seen crises throughout Europe and North America. And although these crises are not adequately defined, it is clear to us that there are people who are tens of thousands of people who are marching in the streets in Spain today, who have been in the streets of Greece for some time now, who have been mobilizing in Portugal, who are experiencing what is characterized as austerity measures in England, increasingly in Germany, and also having to participate in this debate, or certainly to experience this so-called debate around austerity happening within the United States today. I mean, this is part of a profound crisis that also informs the consciousness and the activity of political forces in this country and throughout the world, is one of the reasons why it's necessary for us to talk about the issue of political parties, because the repression of and crushing of our movements, independent organization in the 1960s, that has had consequences even up to now, we see being replaced by another stronger reality, another stronger trajectory, and that is the trajectory of the peoples recapturing our own struggles, our own movements. And I think this issue of the political party happens within this context. Most people, as we said, don't understand what political party is. Within the United States, there are the Democratic and Republican parties, which are the dominant ruling class parties. Everybody can go to specific places or even have it brought to them, and they can sign up and they can indicate that they're members of the Republican Democratic parties. In other places around the world, there are also these organizations that call themselves political parties, and they are political parties. And often they allow the broad participation of masses of the people. And this is one of the things that disguises exactly what political parties are, because political parties are class organizations. Notwithstanding how the Democrats or the Republican Party in the United States present themselves to the people, they are class organizations. They represent the interests of the white ruling class in this country. And its effectiveness is based in part on its ability to disguise that reality and to allow people to vote for various policies of one sector of the ruling class as opposed to another. I think that's really important for us to understand. And when we understand this, we understand that the oppressed peoples, the workers, ourselves, need our own political parties that can contend for power, for a class and for a nation of people that has been oppressed, and that oppression has been the foundation of our exploitation. I wanted to open up with that and just initiate this discussion. Comrade Luwazi, I know that you experienced the defeat of the independent political party organization that we had created in Congo, at least indirectly, and in many ways you are in London, England now as a consequence of how the powers of imperialism moved to crush the independent political organization of African people in Africa. Can we just have you, let's talk about the question of political parties and within that context, what political parties are and what is it that we have to do to build a revolutionary political party that will represent the interests of African people, Uhuru?
Yes, Uhuru Chairman, for help with you. In the Congo, where I grew up, we had the political party of Mobutu. You know, my generation grew up under Mobutu, and under Mobutu, we knew only one organization, and that was the MPR, and that was Mobutu's party. You know, the single party, the state party, as they used to refer to it. So we didn't know much about political party as such. We didn't even know that we had the right not to be in that organization, because everybody, by the constitution would impose on us, was a member of that party. And that was the result, of course, as the chairman said earlier on, of the crushing or the defeat of the revolution that we attempted to do in the Congo. So it's only as I become an adult, then you begin to understand the history. Then we find out that there was a history of struggles in the Congo. Who would represent the people? Who will be the genuine representative of the people? And that struggle took many different aspects. The first aspect, what happened in the 60s, late 50s and the 60s in the Congo, when it became clear to the Belgian that the earth is being shaken by the people, and there was no way they can maintain direct white rule upon the people, they began creating political organizations. But those political organizations were nothing else but tribal associations. That's how people refer to them. So if you were from a particular ethnic, they create an organization so you could draw people from that ethnic state. And sometimes there were also regional organizations. Like in Nakatanga, we had an organization for people who were not of Luba origin. So you will have people who are Chokwe, who are Lunda, Bayeke, and the Bemba, and so on. People like that, they will be in a corner cut, in opposition to anyone who was from Luba ethnic. And so they created organizations like that. And one of the most powerful organizations at the time in the Congo was ABAKO. ABAKO was led by Joseph Kasavubu. And ABAKO was an interesting organization. It was for people who spoke the Congo language. It was the Congo ethnic, Obakongo ethnic, so to speak. But they demanded independence. Even before Lumumba came to the conclusion that we had to be independent, they were demanding independence. But they were demanding independence just for the people of that ethnic. So this is the kind of organization we had in the Congo. So throughout, just regional organization or ethnic or tribal organization. And Lumumba was the first to emerge on the scene with a national organization that you refer to as Mouvement National Congolais, so Congolese National Movement. And that movement, anybody can be a member. Any African could be a member. So, and that was like one difference. And in opposition to most of the organizations that were created there, most organizations were demanding integration. Reform of Belgian colonialism to allow people who refer to as évolué, which means assimilado, civilized Negroes. They were in charge of those organizations. And the white imperialists, the Belgians, put them there. And every single leader
in the Congo had Belgian advisors, every single one of them, so to ensure that whatever they did was not in a position to economical, political, or ideological interests of the Belgian colonialism. And so now, with the independence being given, or is about to be given, that created serious problems because the masses of people are the workers and the peasants who fought for independence, who fought for the struggle to freedom at the time, find in Lumumba the right person, the right leader, the person who reflected the aspiration, their interests, who would not hesitate to defend the interests of the workers and the peasants. And that created a serious problem in Congo because the African petty bourgeoisie was not certain to access power because of the Lumumba and his organization, the MNC. But the problem we have now in terms of creating political parties, since the MNC, Lumumba's organization, was not a working class organization, was not a revolutionary organization for the workers and the poor peasant, it meant that that organization was not equipped to fight for power and to keep power in the hands of African workers and peasants themselves. Because MNC, over Lumumba, and a handful of leaders were committed to serve the people, to serve African liberation, but the vast majority of Evoluer cadre, its organization, did not agree with Lumumba, did not agree that the independence should go to the people. So they attacked the organization from the inside. And that was one way Lumumba was attacked. People should remember Mobutu was a personal secretary, one of the people who had access to Lumumba, who were very close to Lumumba. He wasn't the only one who betrayed Lumumba and the struggle. And they were able to do so because the organization, MNC, it was a mass kind of movement organization open to all elements of bourgeoisie. The only thing you have to say, you agree with independence, and then you're going to be a member, regardless if you are for exploitation of the workers, regardless if you're going to stand up for the repression of the workers. So that organization was split, and those who disagreed with the workers being in charge joined the Belgian imperialism, and then they used the Belgian and created this colonial state to repress basically the people. So that was like one of the first lessons, that independence was not for everybody. If you wanted to achieve independence, you must have your own political party. If you want to achieve power, you must have your own independence, political party of workers and the poor peasant. And outside that, our people were in the first situation. That was the first phase. The second phase, The second phase was when it became obvious now that Lumumba was betrayed, Lumumba was attacked, Lumumba was assassinated, and then the organization that he created could not advance the struggle any further. Most of the anti-imperialist forces in the Congo were engaged in a debate that the struggle must continue. But there, so there was a split. You had those who said, what we need to do is struggle for the world to recognize we, the followers of Lumumba, as legitimate source of power, as the legitimate government or leaders of people of Congo. You had that section.
As a legitimate.
Yeah.
Okay.
As legitimate, yeah. Yeah. And you had that section. And they did not believe that they had to make a revolution. They didn't believe that. They believed as long as most people that were support them, as long as some elements also in the army support them, as long as they are supported by the people as well, then they can negotiate with imperialism to recognize them as legitimate leaders of Congo. And that section was led by people like Zenga, And Zenga later on came back to Congo and was the prime minister of Joseph Kabila. Now, you have the other factor who was led by people like Mulele, who believed that the people must make the revolution. And Mulele believed that the peasants are the leading force for the revolution in the Congo. So they need to be organized for revolution. And the sellout must be defeated, must be destroyed. And Mulele believed in that. So Mulele, after traveling in Russia and China, where he got some military training and the political training, he came back to Congo and he went to southwest of Congo and he launched a movement against neo-colonialism. But the problem we had is that although Mulele's intentions were correct, but it's not just enough to say we'll make a revolution. We need to build a political party, a revolutionary party, and you must define the philosophy, the strategy of that political party. You must, you know, have some kind of a roadmap. You know, how the workers and the peasants will get organized, how will they be able to go on the offensive, what the international duties towards the African revolution will be, what the duties towards the world revolution will be. All these things need to be defined. So the strategy and tactics of the African working class and the commercial have been specified. It was not done. The party was not created, and the revolution started before the party was created. Mm-hmm. And you run into all kinds of problems because of that. And we did not even have the benefit to exhaust the space for democratic struggle, despite the repression that was taking place. But the movement was still strong. And the belief in Lumumba was very strong, so there was a lot of possibilities to develop. So these two tendencies were in the struggle, but it was not spelled out properly to the masses. And what happened was that in 64, when the United States intervened militarily through the Cuban anti-Castro, Cubans, they were armed by the United States with airplanes, stuff like that. The Belgian army also intervened. At least 25,000 of them attacked the revolution. All the mercenaries from South Africa, all former soldiers, German soldiers, Italian soldiers, people like that, the Portuguese mercenaries, all of them converged in the Congo. And then the masses in the revolution didn't have international strategy. There was no African plan, so to speak, today. But imperialism had it. So the revolutionary party of the African working class, doesn't matter where it is, as the Congo example showed, you must have an African plan, because imperialism is going to come to you with an international plan. And that was some of the lessons. And we also have to sum up a sector that speaks of Africa being independent, like in the Congo, but without revolution as an opportunist tendency, because that sector, as the Chinese were giving support to the revolution, from what I understand, the Chinese just gave weapons to the revolution in east of Congo. The leaders of that revolution, who didn't believe in the revolution, were meeting with Chombe, or delegates of Chombe, they were meeting with a delegate of Kasavubu and Mobutu, because for them, the contradiction was Chombe. Chombe was like the guy who represented the victory of Lumumba. If Chombe is dealt with, the African bourgeoisie can come together. And afterwards, during those negotiations, before they know it, Chombe was appointed the prime minister in the Congo. And Chombe was given enough money, weapons, things like that, to attack the revolution in the east of Congo. And he was a bloodbath in the east of Congo. So you had these two sectors of African Liberation Movement in the Congo vying for power without clearly explaining, articulating that there was a contention between the African National Liberation Movement. One believed in revolution, one didn't, and the one who believed in revolution did not have access, didn't exhaust the explanation to the people. You know, what's revolution? What is the political party? What's the party of the workers? The discussion we have now. You know, it started happening, but it wasn't exhausted. So when the revolution was defeated, we grew up, my generation grew up in the darkness, no understanding. that the Revolutionary Party is a party, is a class party. We need to know all these things. And it's a class, not just a class party in terms of the struggle between African workers, the poor, and African bourgeoisie. They always saw in terms of African nation, the West African nation against imperialism. These are things we discover later on. So that's some of the lessons, basically, we can draw from the struggle to build a Revolutionary Party in the Congo.
Uhuru, you're listening to Africa Live. We're talking with comrades Omawale K. Fing in Houston, Texas, by phone, and Louise Kinshasa, who is in London, England. We're talking about the issue of the political party. What is a political party? Is it necessary? And we're talking about this partially because our objective is to recruit thousands and thousands of people into the African People's Socialist Party internationally, as well as because it's absolutely necessary for people to understand political parties, because most of the people who are involved in political activity of some sort in what presupposes to be a democratic setting do so through political parties. Right now, what we like to do is go to break, and we'll be back with Omawale K. Fing again, who is in Houston, Texas. We're going to continue this discussion about political parties, and we're going to say a little bit about some of what we've learned from Comrade Louise Kinshasa up to now, and what implications that has, implication that had for where it is we're trying to go. So we'll be back in a moment. For those of you,
this is Africa Live.
That's right. I think one of the some of the important things that come at, that we've learned from what Louise Kinshasa has just told us about the situation in Congo is that this issue of a political party is not a small thing, and to a major aspect of building a political party and building a revolutionary movement is to be able to flesh out the contending class and other kinds of interests that might be involved, and that it's important to note, as Comrade Kinshasa was telling us, that inside Lumumba's own organization, he was under attack, that there was attack inside the organization. And those of us who are familiar with what happened with Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana will remember also that with the U.S. Led coup against Nkrumah in 1966, the vast majority of the people in that convention's People's Party went over on the side, certainly those who were with Nkrumah, went over to the side of the coup makers and the U.S. imperialists. So struggling within the party itself to define itself is a critical matter. And I'm saying this because the work that we're doing within the African People's Socialist Party internationally right now is being done under the leadership of a campaign that's known as One People, One Party, One Destiny campaign. And it is a situation where we are in constant struggle to hold up a revolutionary stance, to fight for and make sure that the revolutionary principles of our organization are upheld. And it is not for a little reason that we're doing this. We're doing this because if we're going to have a successful revolution that results in real social transformation, a transfer of power from an oppressive colonial imperialist ruling class to the workers, then these are issues that have to be sorted out even before the revolution. It's not something that you can wait until something happens and then say, let's figure out what it is that we stand for. And that's the reason that we've been involved in these struggles. And that's something that everybody in the party should understand. And I think that was really helpful, what Comrade Luezi has just put forward. Secondly, I think for the benefit of everybody, the notion that a political party doesn't exist in a vacuum, even as we recognize that political parties represent particular class interests. Political parties are instruments through which a particular class seizes and wields political power. Even as we recognize that, we also have to recognize that it's not happening in a vacuum, that there are other forces out in the world, who some of whom will be in our party, some will not be in our party. Some will be revolutionary, some will not be revolutionary. Some will be Africans, some will not be Africans. But we are going to have relationships with all of these forces, and being able to navigate our way, to find our way in this process requires a real strategic recognition by the leaders of the party, and also clarity of who we are ideologically, what our own program is, so that we can always advance it regardless of what kind of situation we might find ourselves in. Comrade Kefing, Omawale Kefing, as a longtime veteran of the African People's Socialist Party, he is the political editor of the Burning Spear newspaper. He has worked with the party in various places throughout the United States and in West Africa. And even coming prior to coming into the party, he had worked briefly with the People's Party number 2 out of Houston, Texas, and before that, of course, had his own experiences that he'll bring to this discussion around the question of the political party, talking about what the political party is and why we recognize it's extremely important for the people to have their own independent organization for the purpose, again, of capturing and wielding political power. Uhuru, Comrade Kefing.
Uhuru, Comrade Chairman and Luezi Kinshasa. Appreciate you bringing me on today. Yeah, I want to just start off the discussion with our relationship inside this country, the relationship that we've had two political parties, and for a while there, we just as organizers saw the political party as something that wasn't for African people. I think we go back to the days of Marcus Garvey and the Universal Negro Improvement Association and the role that the Communist Party USA played in actually the United States government to crush that movement. Then once that movement was crushed and the Communist Party attempted to siphon off the African revolutionaries who were left on the scene, then you had people like Richard Wright Langston Hughes who were coming to the fore saying, hey, this ain't it. So we struggled along for a while. You know, we saw SNCC, SCLC, organizations like that, and finally we saw Malcolm and the Nation of Islam, but finally Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale had done some work, and they actually put the Black Vanguard Workers' Party is exactly what they had on the ground to fight for African emancipation. Now, you begin this program, Chairman, with identifying the destruction, the military defeat of the African Revolution inside this country, which was also a crushing military of the Black Panther Party, the party that most represented the center of African resistance inside this country. This was sort of during the period where I came into contact with the African People's Socialist Party, because the government had come down on the Black Panther Party so tough, and actually the African independence movement so tough, that people were trying to theorize out of the necessity for the Vanguard Party. People had wrote long essays on the question of spontaneity, that now we don't need no party. You see what happens, you know, the party's wrong. You see what happens to the party. Look what happened to the Black Panther Party. So you've got all these different theories coming up of spontaneity, mass political parties, anything except of the Vanguard Party. But what you did see was a zillion white leftists begin to come forward with what they defined then as a party building process. And of course we had the All African People's Revolutionary Party led by Kwame Ture, Adrian Stokely Carmichael, who had, was also in this so-called party building process, but their only program was to build the party. It had no relationship to the masses of the masses of the people. Now, I was out there, you know, working with some people who, for the most part, they were the spontaneous people. But in 1974, I happened to come across the Burning Spear newspaper, which introduced me to the theory of the African People's Socialist Party, and that is what led me to, you know, to further entrench my already belief that we need the Vanguard Party to take us, you know, to take us to freedom. So that was my first relationship with the party, and see, because we had been up until now had not studied, you know, revolutions. I mean, we're talking about like the Chinese Revolution, and most importantly, the Vietnamese Revolution, and what it means to actually put a party, put the Vanguard Party on the ground in African communities. So the African People's Socialist Party was this organization for me. Began to do some real studying on the party, using the basis of criticism, self-criticism, that it was actually taking to make the movement go forward. The question of having the faith and confidence in the masses, having the faith and confidence of the party to complete this mission was the thing that I noticed, that I took to heart, that
that was able to make me go forward. Then in the sixes, we can look at organizations like the MPLA, even the ANC, ZANU, organizations that what you had was a conglomeration of all kind of ideological perspectives within one organization. I think this is one of the main reasons when they come to power that the bourgeoisie is still represented, as opposed to one organization, as is the African People's Socialist Party and the ASI, which is sameness and ideology, sameness and theoretical leanings in terms of African internationalism. We had it in one trajectory, and we were not afraid to look at the Leninist concept of the Vanguard Party, and be able to look at the class interests of what any party represents. And again, I really think it's important that we look at the organizations like ZANU, ANC, MPLA, SWAPO up in Southwest Africa, and even Frelimo, just a conglomeration of a gathering of all sorts of people. Louis, I think you mentioned some of that in an organization that Lumumba had put together. I think independence was the only question now. So the only question with the African People's Socialist Party is that we see, we work for power to be in the hands of African workers and peasants. So that's what I'm looking at right now. Uhuru.
I do think it's important. Other people can join in this discussion. I'm hoping that that you, comrades, be able to go, hang on to the next segment too. We're going to have some more people come on the second segment. If you can, that'll be helpful. But for others who wanted to join this discussion, our number in the U.S. is 727-565-1599, or you can email us at dj@uhururadio.com. That's uhururadio.com. And our Skype ID is Uhuru Radio. I think that's really helpful, Comrade Kayfing. And one of the things I think is really important, and here is something we can probably learn something from the Vietnamese liberation movement, the Vietnamese Workers' Party, that led the struggle against the French, the U.S., that finally led to what is independence right now. But the Workers' Party, the working class, the African people, the African workers, tied to colonial domination, and have as its responsibility, one, to lead the struggle of the whole nation, that is to say, the struggle for national liberation, which presupposes certain kinds of even cross-class relationships and movements, entities, on the one hand, but it also has the responsibility of leading to a socialist conclusion. It has the responsibility to lead so that this struggle for national liberation also results in social transformation that results in power in the hands of the African workers and poor peasants. And I think that's something that perhaps has confused a lot of people, because at any given moment, the strength of the workers and the organization of the peasants may not be optimal. And at certain times, you will see that the African petty bourgeoisie may be the most vociferous. But if we really understand that the whole social system rests upon a foundation of the exploitation of workers and poor peasants and the theft of our resources, then we still have faith in a formula that creates a revolutionary party rooted in the African working class and poor peasantry that assumes for itself the responsibility of emancipation of the entire nation and the struggle for social transformation. I think that's something that is really important for us to understand as well. I think that's part of what we were talking about, the dilemma that many of the African revolutionary movements at particular times have found ourselves confronted with, because for a long period of time, under colonial domination, it was easy to see and say that the white man is the enemy. So it was just them, the white people, against us, the black people. And it was so deep and profound that the issue of class contradictions existing within the African population could not emerge. It was only, in many ways, paradoxically, a consequence of struggles that loosened up the grip that direct colonial white power had on the African population, that we saw the capitalists, the imperialists, having to utilize various Africans within our own communities to carry out their interests and their aims, and creating institutions and other kinds of things to facilitate that, and thereby really crystallizing class contradictions existing among African people ourselves. Nevertheless, it seems to me that that this tradition of us against them, us black people against them, the white people, has lingered in many ways to the extent that it is difficult for many Africans, and sometimes who we might otherwise consider progressive, to admit to class contradictions and the need to go beyond the simple question of freeing ourselves from quote-unquote white power. I don't know how you hear this, Comrade Luwazi. You think that was a reality at all, say like in Congo, for some of the people to... Well, obviously, people had a greater, higher level of consciousness than many of the middle-class leadership, because they were at least able to recognize the need for quote-unquote national liberation as opposed to liberation based on ethnicity. But the white versus the black issue, I don't know, did you see it at all subverting the development of class consciousness in Congo?
Yes, I would say so, because if you see in the east, and you see in Katanga, in the south, and even an organization like Abaco, which was an ethnic organization, but before that, there has been an emergence of a movement led by Kimbangu in the 20s, early 20s. And I'm sure he had to do something with Garvey, or he was aware of Garvey, because he raised the national consciousness. He was talking of the liberation of the black people, not of the ethnicity, but he was talking in absolute terms that you'll be freed from white oppressors. So you had that kind of consciousness also that was part of the movement that will have to emerge later on in the 60s, where people can easily, even the leadership is there, move from the understanding of a class contradiction with that from the bourgeoisie to come to the national contradiction. No, that's going to come about on a global scale. You had that kind of consciousness there. But the class consciousness in terms of who was that community bourgeoisie? It was no really, really clear. What happened is that people in some areas tend to identify anyone who spoke like a French as the ethnic bourgeoisie. Hmm. And you could pay a heavy price for just you know, being seen as somebody, you know, who wish to express, because you could be identified to those who killed that Lumumba, although you were just an ordinary employee somewhere in a colonial economy. So there was some kind of confusion there. And the whole question of alliances, how do you move the interests of the African workers and peasants by making tactical alliances? All these questions were not exhausted. So the last question was just being explored. I thought it was just an explosion, basically. And you needed, at the time, a leadership that can definitely explain what it was, how workers and the peasants can get in. I can get engaged in their own terms to move the struggle for the benefit of African workers and the poor peasants. And all these struggles did not get the benefit of experience. You didn't get the benefit of Africans outside. You didn't get the full benefit of the world revolution that was taking place. Even people like Guevara, who went to Congo, and he couldn't meet Mulele. He wanted to meet Mulele, but Mulele was far from where he was, since there was no National Revolutionary Party as such coordinate or thing. So he ended up dealing with what he saw there. Kabila was one of the person. Normally say Kabila was one of the people he met there. And we also had another problem in terms of just having. Because when we say class consciousness, you're also talking about the strategies of a particular class. In Congo, if you did not stand for armed struggle, I think it was the case for the African world. If you did not stand up for armed struggle, then you were not revolutionary. And what happened, even where people did not embrace the revolution like the East as such, I'm talking about the leadership, but they were engaged in military operations because that's foreseen as revolutionary, and with no consolidation of the area, there's conflict with no political dictation of masses, where they just won these victories. And when you hear this, unleash.
Do you have your radio on, Comrade Luezi?
No, I don't.
Okay, we should get an echo. I was wondering about that.
So when imperialism unleashed the counter-service in Congo under the leadership of the United States, it was difficult because the people could not, let's say the movement could not consolidate the support of the masses because there was no clear strategy, no clear programs that they can benefit from. Everything was turned to military. If the military operation became the priority, that was like in the East. And in the South, you had military operations as well, but they were done with a political education. So overall, the class question did not achieve a full understanding, as we can say today with African internationalism, but the process was underway. And for that to develop, we needed a revolutionary party that can definitely take that task of explaining, educating, training gatherers, going outside, bringing revolutionaries to our African world, you know, doing the international work, things like that, creating a medium of communication, newspapers, radio programs, all these kind of stuff like that, they must have the benefit of that. So they can struggle on Mobutu came to power. It was difficult to understand it. And people like Tshisekedi and others have benefited from that, that the people have not constantly their understanding or what African people is. And today, even as you see in a place like Mali, you can welcome pluralism, you know, because the memory is gone, of the consciousness, has not been consolidated, to understand what such question is, as it were.
Uhuru. We're gonna be moving to the next segment of the show momentarily. We'll be bringing on comrades Charo Walker, and Alex Morley from Nassau in the Bahamas, and Aisha Fields from Huntsville in Alabama, within the United States. But I don't know if you brothers will be able to stay on for the next segment. You'd certainly be welcome. I think you bring a really important contribution. Yes.
Yeah, I would hope that we can do this program on the party again on next week, because I think I've got a little more to say on this. You know, I think we need to specifically talk about who the people are who make up this part of the cadre, the professional revolutionaries, and just the general thrust of the party. I don't think this hour was good enough for us to do that. So
I agree.
Let's try to do this again.
Okay, and if you can, you can still hang on to this. This I think is important. If you got the ability, you might still be able to have some of that discussion in this next hour if you're able to hang on. But
I'll hang on.
All right, yeah. Dan. Good.
Okay.
All right.
I was a chairman for the second question. I'm not sure if I was on a point or not.
You're not sure what?
If I was on a point.
You're all right.
You're all right.
If you can be here into the next hour, it's going to even be better. All right? If you can.
Okay. I probably not, because I have the CLO meeting.
Okay.
And well, he has to prepare for that one.
All right, comrade. So yeah, it was good. Well. And we're going to have to move on to the next segment now. Uhuru, comrade Luwezi. Thank you so much.
Yes, Chairman. Uhuru,
Luwezi.
This is Africa Live.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
argument about stealing somebody, don't take something that belongs to another person. On top of the road, on the side, the people, the worker, office workers, the labor workers, 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 them go they worker, inside bus, them go they motorcycle, them they ride. Plenty crowd inside this crowd, sometimes for one corner, sometimes for one street. You go there here,
kacham, kacham, tiff, 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 kacham, kacham, rum, 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 kacham, kacham, rubba, rubba, kacham, kacham,
hold on,
kacham,
kacham,
holy, rubba, rubba,
kacham, kacham, looking go start, watching go start, chasing go start, somebody go there, where them go grab, them go beat them well, well, them fit lynch them well, well, police go come well, well, them go carry them go court, them go put them for jail, them fit put them 6 months,
oh, them go put them 1 year,
them fit put them 2 years,
never put up for 5 years,
then fit to put them 7 years,
never put up for 10 years,
then fit to put them 6 months,
never put up for 1 year,
then fit to put them 2 years,
never put up for 5 years,
then fit to put them 7 years,
never put up for 10 years.
If not, them go shoot them well, them go shoot them for arm robbery. Inside the people, the worker, office workers, labor workers, 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 them go they try to try to make ends meet, them go they hustle to try to make ends meet, them go put hands for back to try to make ends meet, them go they beg your God to try to make ends meet, them go be slaves for them town to try to make ends meet. Oh yes, them go they try to try to make ends meet. Oh, them go they hustle to try to make ends meet. I say turn your face small to the right wing. Oh God, bata bata day for the authority people day for the instead of workers. We have officials instead of buses. Them they ride motor car instead of motorcycle. Now helicopter instead of them worker. Now worker for them. Authority people them go they steal. Public contribute plenty money. Now authority people they steal. Authority man not the big pocket. Now petty cash him go they pick. I'm robber, him need gun. Authority man, him need pen. Authority man in charge of money. Him no need gun, him need pen. Pen get power, gonna get. If gun steal 80,000 naira, pen go steal 2 billion naira. You not go hear them shout. You not go hear them shout at all.
You
not go hear them say.
Robber, robber.
You not go say those words at all. You not go hear them shout. Those words at all. You hear them say,
blah,
blah, blah. You hear them shout.
Blah, blah, blah.
You say those words.
You
hear them shout.
Blah, blah, blah.
You hear them tell the word.
Blah, blah, blah.
Now different way be them way. Now civilized style be them style.
Yes, 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 yes.
Oh, yes, of course. Contract or something many back on our
head.
Appropriation.
Yes, 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 yes.
Maladministration.
Yes, 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 yes.
Nepotism.
Yes, 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 yes.
mitigation.
Yes, 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 yes.
Make a remember not the one who weighed them they use.
Yes, 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 yes.
Defraud the lament.
Yes, 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 yes.
For generalization. Embezzlement.
Yes, 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 yes.
Vilification.
Yes, 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 yes.
Mismanagement.
Yes, 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 yes.
Public inquiry.
Yes, 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 yes.
Authority stealing, pass and robbery.
Yes, 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 yes.
We Africans, we must do something about this nonsense.
Yes, 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 yes.
We say we must do something about this nonsense.
Yes, yes,
I repeat,
yes,
we Africans, we must do something about this nonsense.
Yes, yes,
because
yes,
now
yes,
authority is stealing pass and robbing.
Yes, 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 yes.
Authority man, don't go to steal. Public country, don't lend you money.
Yes, yes.
Now your authority, don't go steal. Authority
yes,
man, buy the big pocket. No dirty cash, don't go to pick. I'm robber, hear me come. Authority man, he need pen. Authority man, he charge up money. Him no need gun, he need pen. Pen get power, gun no get. If gun steal 80,000 naira, pen go steal 2,000,000 naira. And now we hear them shout, tip it if tip.
Ah,
and now we hear them shout, it all to broke broke. Oh no 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 no, and now we hear them shout, it all tip it if tip.
This is Africa Live.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
Uhuru, we're back. In this second segment, Omowale K. Fing out of Houston, Texas, has agreed to stay on with us. But we brought on from Nassau in the Bahamas, Charo Walker and Alex Morey. Morley, from the African People's Socialist Party of the Bahamas, and Aisha Fields from Huntsville, Alabama. And as I mentioned earlier, Omowale K. Fing from Houston, Texas, is with us. We've been having, I think, a really important kind of discussion, though with serious limitations, as K. Fing has reminded us off air. About the party. What is the party? What is the why a party? The significance of a revolutionary party, and why the party is really important right now. They're doing this really important era of imperialism and deep and a severe crisis. I think that one of the things that came out of the previous discussion that's really important for us is to recognition that as Africans who have our own peculiar experiences on the colonial domination, as the whole white world was built at our expense, and class contradictions within that white world unfolded, developed in that context, and political parties within that white world emerged from that process, making it much easier to be able to delineate class contradictions. The workers, working class, the ruling class, the bourgeoisie, though not necessarily always responded to effectively by a revolutionary organization, clearly had distinct differences within Europe. Whereas in Africa, we had a situation where the whole people, everybody, all of us were dominated by imperialist white power. And that resulted in a consciousness that saw the white people against the black people, and a certain tradition that has continued to permeate the consciousness of our people up to now, sometimes making it difficult to deal with the issue of class when class is truly a real factor, something that has crystallized with the success in many ways of our struggles that made it necessary for white power to employ Africans as one means by which they would exercise control and authority more effectively, with certain assumptions of a democracy associated with that. And now we have a situation where it is absolutely necessary for the African workers and poor peasants to be able to distinguish our interests from that of the African petty bourgeoisie, which is, generally speaking, an extension of the rule of imperialism inside our own communities, disguised in this instance because it comes in blackface, unlike in the previous era when it was whiteface. So we have this situation also where, just in practical terms, the struggle for national liberation is a real issue. The nation itself, the whole nation, has to be freed from imperial white domination. That means that in many ways, even African petty bourgeois forces would be involved on some level in the struggle for independence, national independence, on the one hand. But obvious limitations to that can be seen in the consequences of the struggles for independence that has been accomplished throughout Africa and much of the African world, including and throughout the Caribbean, etc., when there has been a quote-unquote national independence, a national kind of at least a pseudo or false national consciousness born of that, but the African workers and poor peasants not only have not done any better, but in many instances are worse off now under so-called national, black national independence than they were under direct white colonial domination. So here we have a responsibility as a revolutionary party of leading the struggle for national liberation, which means also we contribute to the development of a certain national consciousness, but in this instance, a revolutionary national consciousness, and we have the responsibility of also leading the struggle for socialist transformation that will result in power being transferred, being captured and utilized by the African working class, aligned with the poor peasantry. I think that's that was one of the most important aspects of the discussion that we just had. But there were some other things. And I want to let Omawale K. Fing briefly open this up, because we need to talk about the composition of the party itself. Well, who is it that's in the party, and what is it that gives a certain character to a revolutionary party, as opposed to the parties that most of our people have a relationship to all over the world, including there in the Bahamas and throughout Europe and in Africa and the United States as well. So, K. Fing, just a few minutes. Why don't you go ahead, and then we'll turn it over to these comrades in Alabama and in the Bahamas to talk about the party and how we are working and struggling, you know, like on those fronts.
Uhuru, thank you for bringing me on again, Chairman O'Malley, and Uhuru to the panel here. Yeah, I wanted to say something about the composition of the Revolutionary Party. And again, I'm going to bring back the Vietnamese Workers' Party in Vietnam, where we saw countless tens of thousands of actual cadre of the Vietnamese Workers' Party and National Liberation Front actually assassinated before the people's eyes. But what had been done, that Ho Chi Minh and the party had organized so that that organization would steady replenish itself. I think that this is what the first, second, third, fourth, and fifth Congresses of the African People's Socialist Party is about. All of this, these manuals that we have, that we print in each edition of the Burning Spear newspaper, what we want, what we believe, that we continuously have the party schools, that what we do is that we have to train and create party cadre. That is an organization of professional revolutionaries, an organization of comrades whose belief and faith in the masses is unwavering, an organization whose belief and faith in the party is unwavering, if there is to be revolution.
we're talking about 24, you know, our profession is revolutionaries, and as such, we don't have no stake in anything else. That is, well, I better put me a savings account over here. I better secure this job over here just in case the revolution don't happen. We can't make revolution with that kind of attitude. Our cadre, the cadre of a revolutionary political party that represents the interests of the African working class is a party that's made up of cadre whose sole responsibility is to make the revolution. That we are 24-hour a day revolutionaries, that we understand that we are tied to an organization that that replenishes itself through the work that we do, and that we move forward based on the principles of criticism, self-criticism. I think that what we can see and know, for instance, the struggle that was made against some comrades over in Sierra Leone who had deviated from the line, and who, this is just not a deviation from the line, but who would call on the imperialists to come and solve a problem in Sierra Leone. While this is true and that this is a fact, we still had people who were coming into Huru News, writing us all on Facebook, whatever, and saying that, hey, you don't need to be making this struggle in the open. What it is that these people are afraid of criticism, self-criticism, and the only interest in not raising the criticism, self-criticism, that is the principle of the African People's Socialist Party, is that your class interest is hid in not making that struggle. In other words, the bourgeoisie will remain in power unless we will base ourselves in an organization that have faith in the masses and are willing to make the criticism, self-criticism, because we got no stake in being wrong. So, I think that this is fundamental. I think you said earlier, Chairman, that these political parties don't exist in a vacuum. Neither does the cadre exist in a vacuum. Our, lifelong commitment is to the revolution. We saw them try to crush that Vietnamese revolution. They could not do it because the structure was there. That is what the African People's Socialist Party has been attempting and has been putting in place for the last 40 years, and we will continue to do so, and the Six-Party Congress is another mechanism to tighten this organizational structure up so that African people will have the mechanism, will have the tool to lead this struggle, which, when successful, will overturn imperialism, and all the people in the world will see a new day. The point is, we need cadre, and we're calling on the best sons and daughters of Africa to come join this revolution, this party.
Thank you so much, K-Fing. And I just want to share something with the brothers and sisters. This is on the Socialist Revolution in Vietnam, Volume 3. It was written by Lê Duẩn, who was a leader of the Vietnamese Workers' Party, a critical leader, actually. And I just wanted to share some of the comments that he is making about under a section that's called We Must Foster New Thoughts to Build Up Socialism. And this is something, of course, as I said, came from the Workers' Party. He says that some people think of political remodeling as of something which has been created just a few years ago. In reality, it is nothing else than propaganda and educational work, criticism and self-criticism that our party has been carrying out ever since its founding. We have propagandized and educated the people, made criticism and self-criticism to overcome shortcomings and errors. Without intensive propaganda work and consequently without the people's correct thinking, our revolution could not be brought to success. What is new is that this political remolding drive will take place on a larger scale than ever before. However, it will continue the same work, propaganda and education, criticism and self-criticism within the party and among the people. This is a very hard ideological struggle. To inculcate new ideas upon a person does not merely consist in speaking to him, but in essence to wage an ideological struggle. The enemy also makes propaganda among the masses. He considers it a very important weapon for his domination. But as his interests go counter to those of the masses, he mainly rules them by laws. The masses never obeying them, he resorts to violence. The case is different with us, etc. With the laboring people, our main problem is propaganda, education, criticism, and self-criticism in order to acquaint them with the work to be done, develop their forte, and become their foible so that society can progress. Therefore, criticism and self-criticism is one of the fundamental laws of a socialist society. We have all gone through ideological remolding, which we now undertake with a better understanding. This time we set out not only to remold the thoughts of us party members, but also to help the people as a whole grasp new ideological weapons to go forward. I just wanted to share that by Les Juan, because, again, it talks about the role of the party, not as some casual relationship that people enter into because we like each other or something like that, but it's, there's an assumption of a severe responsibility for changing the world and changing our relationship to the world. So I just wanted to thank Kayfing for that. And so, comrade Alex Charo, I better call an individual there because otherwise both of you are raring to go but probably start blurting out stuff. Comrade Charo, so can you talk about how, you know, like building the party in the Bahamas, how do you see the significance of the Revolutionary Party there? And I think that's a critical question because also in the Bahamas we have this case of having political parties and after so-called independence. And we have several political parties, and people participate in all these parties with the assumption that somehow the parties speak to them and speak for them without recognizing that political parties do represent specific, a particular class. They are class organizations, so that you have the petty bourgeoisie in power in the Bahamas, and they have their political parties in the Bahamas, and even though you know, they give good parties and things like that, it's not necessarily representative of the interests of the African workers, who are the majority of the people who are cleaning up behind tourists and doing all other kinds of things to keep the economy going there. Are you muted, Comrade Charo?
Uhuru,
Charo.
Uhuru. Uhuru. Thanks, and first I want to say thanks for inviting me onto the discussion today. You're right, there are political parties here in the Bahamas that don't work in the interest of the workers. And I would say Alex and I, we've been saying that in various ways before we met the party. But since we've met the party, we are no longer just quote-unquote activists, but being a part of the African People's Socialist Party has kind of given us, I shouldn't say kind of, it has definitely given us a clear direction on how to build a political party here in the Bahamas that is responsive to the needs and the concerns of the people. Before, we were just kind of existing and saying different things, but now we're actually part of a party that is very much organized. There's a lot of discipline, and there's always, as we build and we consult with leaders within the party, there's always a strategy that we take. We're not just haphazardly doing things. There's always a moment to sit down and clearly map out what we want to do, the goals we want to achieve, and how that will bring more people into the party and how it will achieve the ultimate objective of overturning a lot of the conditions, the unfair conditions that are imposed, especially on workers here in the Bahamas. As a part of the party, a lot of the work that I do, I serve as project director for a lot of the events that we have and a lot of the projects that we have. And being a part of the party has allowed me to approach this work with a lot of science. And as project director, I'm responsible for calling meetings, making sure that there are meeting minutes, agendas, organizing plan of actions. Again, I just want to reiterate that being a part of this party just has made us aware that revolutionary isn't a thing that is by chance. It isn't haphazard. And over the past couple of years, being a part of the African People's Socialist Party, we have had an ASI conference, an African Socialist International Conference. We've had weekly meetings in the Anglican community. We've been a part of a coalition that the chairman, when you were here on one of the occasions that you visited the Bahamas, you helped us spearhead this coalition. We took a leadership role in this coalition, doing a lot of work around raising up the issues that Africans in the Bahamas are faced with. We've intervened in marches and rallies here in the Bahamas. So all of this we've been able to do as credit to the African People's Socialist Party. Uhuru.
I think it's really important because in the Bahamas we find a situation that's kind of similar to various places in Africa. There were organizations like the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania, ZANU, with whom we were really close from the continent of Africa prior to independence. And once independence was achieved, however, a formal independence, even though in the case of the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania in South Africa, they did not go to power, the achievement of independence sapped them of any of revolutionary fervor, sapped and undermined whatever revolutionary content they had, because it was obviously just about quote-unquote independence that for which they were organized. And they were able to talk revolutionary talk because that's the language of the era of people who were struggling for independence and against imperialism. But once they achieved it, then there's no discussion of revolution within the Pan-Africanist Congress of Azania, within the political turf inside the Bahamas, because there's quote-unquote independence now. The white man is no longer dominating everything. There are black people who are apparently in power, when actually all we have, of course, is a transfer of administration. It's just that black people administering the interests of white power in the Bahamas. But the masses of people have not yet been brought to class consciousness. So there's been a national consciousness that has a false national consciousness that has developed there. And it's in this context that the African People's Socialist Party is organizing in the Bahamas. And it means that people have developed a tradition of relating to one of the so-called national parties, and that is the custom that they're working with. But party building is for us means that we have to capture the consciousness of the masses of the African workers so that they can see their own class interests. Because even though what is happening is that the African petty bourgeoisie speaks of their own class interests as the interests of the quote-unquote nation or all the people in the Bahamas, the reality is what they've done is they have blinded the masses to the fact that they have a class interest that's separate and distinct. And so I think that's a really important kind of thing that we understand as revolutionaries, and therefore it's going to take a while to educate the masses in I say a while, I don't know exactly what that means. The only thing I do know is that there is a tradition there, and that crisis and the contradiction of imperialism may mean that history will move rapidly. There's no way to tell that, but we should not be surprised if it doesn't happen rapidly. Our tasks still remain the same. And I was just looking at something that was written in something like 1986. It was a pamphlet, The History and Role of the Proletarian Power of the Black Working Class. I wrote it in 1986. There are some contradictions with it, but that I find that there are some really important things to be learned about building the party. And one of the things that I was looking at, it says, in practical terms, party building means, first and foremost, concrete work designed to activate the best of the class into political motion around concrete programs with the immediate aim of achieving absolute political hegemony over our movement and class in the process. Therefore, party building means providing leadership for the class, even when the party is small and has not yet fully achieved this desired capacity. So that's the class. The party is the representative of a political class, and even in the class is not, it's the advanced detachment, it's the advanced sector of a particular class. So the class at large may not have may not be aware and conscious of its interests and aims, but the advanced sector is conscious of that, and it represents the interests of the whole class, even when the class itself is not necessarily conscious and aware of them. That's the task of the Revolutionary Party, and I know that I understand some things about the complexity of the situation that you have in the Bahamas, because in the Bahamas you have a lot of quote unquote nationalists, cultural nationalists, all kinds of nationalists, but who we find various kinds of struggles with, because they do not recognize the interests of the broad masses of working people. They don't have class consciousness. But it's the responsibility of the party to even lead the national liberation movement, to even help to define national consciousness, so that it includes being able to take all those resources that's in the Bahamas, that's owned by the corporations and other foreign entities, that in the national movement will have to include that. That means developing a revolutionary national democratic program right there in the Bahamas that would take on the aspirations and interests of the broad mass of the people, with the objective of winning class, winning hegemony over the whole struggle through the instrument of the class instrument of the African working class, which is the party itself. So let's hear from Comrade Aisha Fields. Comrade Aisha Fields is in Huntsville. She's also the director of the All African People's Development Empowerment Project, and has been leading this work throughout Africa, and more specifically a lot of work in Sierra Leone, in West Africa, and various other places throughout the United States. So welcome to this discussion, Comrade Aisha.
Uhuru Chairman, thank you so much for inviting me. So the question is the role of the party in the work that we're involved in here in Huntsville, Alabama, and in the APDEP work. And I want to maybe start with just my experience as the APDEP leadership in terms of the significance of the party in really, you know, forwarding the aims and objectives of that work. And for those who may not be aware of it, the All African People's Development Empowerment Project is an organization that was established by the African People's Socialist Party in 2007. And the party saw as one of its objectives to be able to do a couple things. One, to be able to win Africans with certain kinds of skills in engineering and you know, agriculture and, you know, other development-related areas, to be able to win those, you know, Africans to use those skills for the development of Africa and African communities, as opposed to the traditional way in which, you know, Africans with those skills, you know, generally, you know, use them, which is to, you know, make sure that European and, you know, North American companies and governments are able to carry out their agenda of war and of capitalist development, you know, that is not something that is in the interest of African people. And oftentimes they're Africans ourselves who attain those kinds of skills who, instead of, you know, being able to put those skills to use for the African Revolution, are actually using those skills, whether we're aware of it or not, to counter the African Revolution. And the African People's Socialist Party, you know, having the absolute objective of overturning the system of imperialism, capitalism, that is responsible for the misery and of African people all over the world, understood that, you know, we have to win, you know, all Africans, whoever may be possible, you know, and our allies to contribute to the process of, you know, of overturning the social system. And so the African People's Socialist Party established the All African People's Development and Empowerment Project to carry out development projects throughout the African world, and to, you know, in the immediate sense, to be able to address some of the quality of life issues that African people are impacted by, but in the overall end game, of course, is to be able to establish strongholds for the party wherever we are, to develop you know, ability for people through practical work, you know, in addressing the issues of clean water and healthcare and food security, to be able to, you know, while addressing those issues, establish the ability for the people to see that the party, you know, is the vehicle through which African people can solve our own problems, and not only in the immediate sense, but in the long term, to be able to have those kinds of programs give us the opportunity to open up the discussion. And for people to be able to see that the in order to completely solve the problems that we're confronted with, in order to do that, that we have to make a revolution. And so these programs have been established, you know, throughout the world. Chairman mentioned Sierra Leone, and throughout the U.S. we've established, you know, various kinds of programs to be able to, you know, use the expertise that Africans have to be able to develop development programs and win, ultimately, another front through which people can come into the revolution or make some kind of practical contribution to the revolution. And in my experience in leading APDEP, and, you know, what I've really come to recognize is that the party and the party's line and the party's organization are key to being able to even address, you know, some of the immediate issues that as African people we're constantly wanting to, you know, to find a way that we can address. I'll give an example. A lot of our work in Sierra Leone up to now has happened primarily through forces who are, you know, really one to the idea of African people, you know, taking control over the development of Africa, which is a really important issue and which is a really important struggle to be involved in. But the critical issue is that we have to see the importance and the relationship between, you know, overturning the system, you know, that is responsible for, you know, not having development in Africa, that we have to have that ahead of us. So the party, the establishment of the party in Sierra Leone, or the establishment of the party, you know, anywhere where APDEP is built, where we're dealing with these questions, is so critical, because we have to constantly have the long view. You know, African people, we don't have access at this moment to the resources that the imperialists have, so they can always outdo us in terms of building clinics or building, you know, schools, or, you know, it, you know, throwing resources here and there. And right now the African working class doesn't have, you know, the ability to go toe-to-toe with the imperialists on the question of resources. But if we can win the people to understand that the long-term objective will ultimately solve the problem, that if we can win the people to understanding that, you know, sustainable development, which is one of the catchphrases that people like to throw around, but if we can win the people to the fact that sustainable development is only achievable long-term through self-determination, through African people having control over our land, our resources, our lives, self-government. If we can do that, then we're making the kind of impact that needs to be made. So I really have appreciated my opportunity as leading APDEP to see the real role and significance of the African People's Socialist Party. And I would say even here locally in Huntsville in Alabama, where, we've had various degrees of, success at building, campaigns among the African working class here that, that there's, the need for the party to be able to explain the question, and how the African working class and our interests, are in apart from in opposition to the interests of the African, middle class, which, as Chairman rightfully said, is really an extension of the imperialist agenda in the African community. And I think it's been really important to have had the party here in Huntsville, where many of Africans who are tied to organization are tied to the Democratic Party or organizations like the NAACP. And I think the party, has been really, at different times really critical in helping to clarify the question for our people and move us closer to understanding, what really must be done. So I just really want to appreciate, again, having the opportunity to participate in this discussion, because I think it's really an important one for our people to be involved in.
Over. Comrade Alex, I met you and Charo in Washington, D.C., at the first Black is Back coalition mobilization. And I think that's significant, too, in the sense that the party played a key role in building the Black is Back coalition. And part of that is recognition of the responsibility of the party to lead around every question. And that was, 2009. I know you had just come to the Bahamas, from the Bahamas to D.C. Was that connection with the party, did it make a difference in how you were able to do work, once going back to the Bahamas?
Definitely. Yuhu, Chairman, Yuhu to all of your listeners. And, I'm very happy that I'm on this panel discussing this issue. I remember that time very clearly, Chairman. As Charo said, before meeting the party, we were basically just fringe, just activists. That's the only thing that you could consider us, either activists or maybe fringe intellectuals who may have had something to say here or there. But we really didn't have any discipline or real revolutionary understanding of the world and where the Africans in the Bahamas stood in the whole in this whole system. But I remember we were online looking for an organization out there that had a different understanding of this whole Obama phenomenon, because everybody just seemed to be drinking out of the Obama Kool-Aid. Mm-hmm. And literally the only call that we saw out there internationally was the Black is Black call. And we, in our research, showed us that the party was a big part of this, big part of the Black is Black call. And I had known about the Black, the African People's Socialist Party from my time in London, but I wasn't as knowledgeable about the party as I am now. So that us coming to D.C., us seeing that call on the internet, and coming to D.C. and being able to be amongst party members and other persons in the Black is Black coalition, that really was a turning point for us in terms of are we going to go on the fringe, the activist road, or are we really going to be part of a political party, a real political movement? So that was a really big turning point for us, Germany, because what it did is it gave us a revolutionary a direction, revolutionary understanding. That was the first time that we were exposed to a revolutionary theory that properly explained Obama, this whole phenomenon of neocolonialism, and what it is that African people are how to do, and that was, and that from that moment we have been growing ever since in terms of our understanding of African internationalism, and also what the party did is just gave us a real revolutionary way to understand all of the phenomenons that we may be facing in the Bahamas, and we may think that these things are separate and apart from things, you know, other things, whether it be immigration, whether it be we're facing private companies coming in and wanting to own national institutions, whether it be any issue, you know. I think that African internationalism and the party has really given us an understanding to better see these phenomena and to see that they have a material basis, and that material basis is really Africans being exploited, you know. But yeah, those are the things that, you know, I think that the party was really influential in just causing that break between us being activists and really trying to be revolutionary members of a real revolutionary organization.
Uhuru. I hope also that the experience with the Black is Back Coalition is another example of how the party, again, has a responsibility to try and lead around every question, and how that relates to the issue of the national liberation struggle that Africans are involved in. And the question is, who's going to lead the national liberation struggle? Will it be led by the African petty bourgeoisie? Can the NAACP get us out of this situation? Any of the other, sometimes even radical nationalists, get us out of this question? Is it going to be the African working class and through its own independent revolutionary organization? And I'm saying this because, again, in Bahamas, you know, as Comrade Charo mentioned, I was a part of the conference that you had that resulted in the development of that coalition. And it's proper that the party should participate in developing that coalition to open up a broad front from throughout the African community there against imperialism on the one hand. But on the other hand, for that front to be effective, it is going to have to be led by the African working class. And that's going to take, you know, science and art to lead that kind of movement. Again, recognizing both the national and the class component of our struggle for freedom and the liberation and unification of Africa and African people worldwide. I want to thank all of you for this discussion and what I've done. Again, I've been doing this rather frequently over the last few weeks, is underestimate the kind of time that we really need to give to this discussion. And because we could have been here for a while and I think gone into this issue with much more depth, and we are going to go into the question of the African People's Socialist Party with much more depth. We have to do that because, again, our objective is to bring Africans back into a political organization. We are convinced that the primary responsibility of all of us in the party and all so-called progressive Africans is to build the African People's Socialist Party, especially during this era of imperialism and irreversible crisis, era of permanent warfare that's being directed against all of the people who constitute the pedestal, the economic foundation upon which the entire white imperialist world rests. The question of the party, the African Revolution, is fundamental. And so we'll have to keep talking about it. And as you comrades know, in December, the sixth Congress of the party is going to be happening here in D.C. And all of us have a responsibility of getting as many Africans as we can to this Congress with obviously the intent of you know, getting, you know, our business in order, developing and defining the trajectory of our movement, our party for the next period. But also, it will be an opportunity to recruit people into the party. What I would like to do, first of all, is just to give Kaifeng. I'm going to have you take up the last couple of minutes to close us out. But first, I want to offer an opportunity for anybody else who want to say anything about this important, you know, question, I believe, of the party. And I think it's more than just understand the African People's Socialist Party, but the role of political parties in general, and especially within the context of this period now, where people have, you know, are really searching to come back into political life, and something that's very, very, very necessary at this point. People have been sidelined behind computer screens with their most active participation in political life being liking something or not. Being posting something or not. I just think that we you know, there's a whole era, there's a whole new trajectory that has to be opened up, and people want it and are looking for it. So I don't know if there's anything that anyone else would say before we allow Kaifeng to close it out. If you don't, we turn it over to Kaifeng now. Anybody else? Anything?
Yeah, Charo.
Yes, Comrade Charo.
Uhuru. I just want to mention that being a part of the party allows for study sessions. So people who may think that they're not necessarily political people, or that they may not be able to grasp some of the issues that may have been raised today, I would say that I'm a perfect example. I came into political life through the African People's Socialist Party, maybe not being well-versed in a lot of theory and philosophy, but I've benefited from a lot of study sessions, and the party is very key in educating us and arming us so that we're able to understand the world around us. Uhuru, I just want to mention that.
Uhuru, thank you so much. Anyone else?
Can I just close this out with this? I'm going to read this brief
quote. Before you do, Kaifeng, I just wanted to just piggyback on Charo's observation that I think is really important. And to say that the African People's Socialist Party is a different kind of organization. That it is an organization that requires discipline, but it's a voluntary discipline. We're not like your local gang member, the CIA, or the mafia that will kneecap you if you decide that you don't want to be in the party or anything like that. Discipline is voluntary, based on unity with what it is that we believe and what the tasks are, and the democratic ability to take that on. But go ahead, Kaifeng, because I was going to cut too much into your time. You've got 2 minutes. Go ahead and use it.
Yeah, I just wanted to read this brief quote from Mao Zedong, and I'm going to substitute African nationalism with Marxism-Leninism. It says, a well-disciplined party armed with the theory of African internationalism, using the method of criticism, of self-criticism, and linked with the masses of the people. An army under the leadership of such a party, a united front of all revolutionary classes and all revolutionary groups under the leadership of such a party. These are the three main weapons with which we have defeated the enemy. I think that's what you've been talking about all along on this program, Jim. I just want to say that Comrade Chowder, I worked with her for a straight year. This is in a party committee. I've done work in Sierra Leone, done work in Kenya. And trust me, African internationalism has theoretically busted down the borders. You know, all we have left to do is break down the borders, the artificial borders that they put between our people, not only just in Africa, but throughout the world. And I think that this party is on the right trajectory to do that. You heard from Comrade Aisha Fields, when she goes to work in Sierra Leone, it's just like working there in Huntsville, Alabama. And trust me, comrades, this is the party that's broke down the so-called theoretical borders that once existed, you know, in terms of the Bahamian Revolution, the Jamaican Revolution, the Nigerian Revolution, the Congo Revolution. No, it's the African Revolution. And we've got to say that it's the African People's Socialist Party that has put this thing together. And comrades like the party in the Bahamas, the party over in Germany, the party in West Africa, and we're going to put our forces back together in Kenya. So this is the thing that we're going to defeat this enemy of Africa and humanity with. Thank you, Chairman, for having me on.
Uhuru, thank you, Comrade Kayfing. Comrade Aisha, thank you so much for your participation, all the incredible work you do in Huntsville and throughout the world. Comrades Chauro and Alex, what did they say? That Nassau got what? That we got to get out of here. Talk to you later. Uhuru.